The Mark Stein Club Q&A, live around the planet, begins in 30 seconds.
Hey, this is Mark Stein. This week we celebrate Irving Berlin's waltzes and the vicissitudes of life. Plus, a cavalcade of number ones across the century. Lulu gives me a disc jockeying demonstration. What was at one time the best known Canadian composition on the planet? Oh, and a mammy song. On the Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. And now, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. August 14th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where Sir Keir Starmer is dragging 12-year-olds into court, 9 p.m. in Paris, where that Olympic ladies boxing champ with the XY chromosomes has filed suit charging Elon Musk and J.K. Rowling, among others, with cyberbullying, 10 p.m. in Kyiv. Yeah, where a Ukrainian diving instructor is wanted by German authorities for his role in the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline. 10:30 p.m. in Tehran for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran in solidarity with the half-hour time zone. Midnight 45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers. 5 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. 7 a.m. in Auckland. And a far more convivial hour for the kippers and kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. Let's move to part of His Majesty's dominions in the Atlantic. To our listeners in the Falkland Islands, happy Falklands Day, commemorating the first recorded sighting of the Falkland Islands by John Davis aboard his ship The Desire in 1592. Falklands Day has not been a public holiday since 2002, when the Executive Council removed it as a bank holiday in order to provide for the reintroduction of a day off on Peat Cutting Monday. Peat Cutting Monday. But we hope, nevertheless, our Falklands listeners are having a grand time of it, because it would kind of suck, you know, just nothing going on until Peat Cutting Monday. We shall have a new tale for our time coming up on Friday. Very timely, and I hope you'll join me for that at Stein Online. Headline of the day from GB News. GB News, that rings a bell. Headline, health warning as deadly virus with no cure spreads to 19 humans in Europe for the first time. Unstoppable. This is the so-called sloth virus, which has arrived in Europe from Trinidad via Brazil. The sloth virus. Apparently, they've never had the sloth virus in Europe ever before, not even in Greece. So be on the lookout for that. The sloth virus, there's no cure. But GB News is pressing the panic porn buttons right now. Okay, let us get to your questions. First off, Georges Pazin, as I always call him, because I mistake him for a Quebecer, but I think he's actually a Californian, and he's George Pazin. But Monsieur Pazin writes, "Hi Mark, did you get your copier yet?" This is a photocopier, as in the last photocopier in the woods scenario, which I first outlined on this show almost a decade ago now. George says, "I'm a little worried that the EU might confiscate all the copiers soon, so you better get your order in quickly." My last photocopier in the woods scenario arose originally back in the middle of the last decade because of the ongoing war on free speech, which has certainly accelerated in the last couple of weeks. But even then, I would not be looking to buy basically any photocopier made this century. Basically, because if you're talking about any technology made in our time, the government runs it, basically. They know where you are. It's like my rental car, in the famous rental car I rented in Budapest and then drove to the Ukrainian border, where it promptly died, so I had to walk into Ukraine. So it's going to be no good in the world they're building for us to have a 21st century car. You're going to need a 1958 Edsel or whatever. And likewise, with the photocopier, you're going to need, you're probably safe up until about 1996. You're going to need something you bought at Radio Shack in 1974, whatever. Because everything you buy now is basically just a form of electronic ankle bracelet, but we think it's great because if you're on day release from prison and you've got your little ankle bracelet on, this is like a really cool ankle bracelet that plays Taylor Swift, and how great would that be? So the last photocopier in the woods scenario depends on a 1978 photocopier. But George goes on, "The US now routinely ignores the First Amendment. See little publicized Mann versus Stein." Yeah, I got some email the other day. I'd completely forgotten about this. The case was in January. I think it spilled over into February. I was a bit worried that it might gate crash the Mark Stein cruise towards the end of February, but it wrapped up before that. But it ended in early February. And we then filed the so-called post-trial motions. The judge, Judge Irving, I shouldn't really talk about the judge because he might take against me. But on the other hand, he's yet to rule on any of these post-trial motions. And we are now over 6 months beyond the trial. So these post-trial, you know, when like Michael Mann files a motion, I have, I forget what it is, 7 or 14 days or whatever to respond. But the judge, when you file post-trial motions in the court, the judge can file, so it's like 6 months. You know, you say what you like about Sir Keir Starmer, but that bastard has banged up these guys in prison. He's basically found them, tried them, and convicted them within a week. You know, I would love that. If Sir Keir Starmer were running this trial in Washington, he'd have shot me in absentia by now. But not this guy. What was I talking about? I've gotten all distracted. The US now routinely ignores the First Amendment. No, George, you're not looking at it right. I remember this guy Pope Hat, who was a big legal commentator. I think he's gone slightly bonkers since then, but he was a serious, respected legal commentator. And he's doing all this thing, oh, it's a fair, you know, all you have to do is let the process play out. If you've got like 20 or 30 years to let the process play out, it's all terribly fascinating. And I actually don't believe that that's how it works, because if it takes 20 or 30 years for the process to play out, who the hell knows who's going to be on the Supreme Court? Joe Biden's last thing before they put him in the concrete overcoat and lowered him into the Potomac. His last genius wheeze to jumpstart his flailing campaign was reform of the Supreme Court. So instead of 9 judges, by the time my case comes before them, there's going to be 37 judges. And who the hell knows how that's going to go for me? I won't be around then, so I don't care. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting your email here. The US now routinely ignores the First Amendment. The UK sides with Ofcom in What is Truth. The EU threatens Elon Musk for interviewing Trump. Is free speech dead in the world? Should Rush have told us to move to New Zealand a decade ago? At least then we'd have had a fighting chance to win the demography war in New Zealand. Yeah, that would be a slightly more ambitious version of the Free State project that we've had in New Hampshire, where libertarians were encouraging people to move to New Hampshire. I forget the towns. And that way they would tip the balance in New Hampshire and there would be at least one state of a libertarian bent. You could do that in New Zealand, but with the present population, Jacinda Ardern, don't forget, Dame Jacinda, I should say, one of the first dames of the new reign. Funnily enough, His Majesty the King's priority dame-wise was Jacinda Ardern. Dame Jacinda says, that we should trust the government. We should all trust the government. You're right, the First Amendment, as I said, the First Amendment is fine if you've got 20 or 30 years to blow on litigating it. Several million dollars. My kids are going to be much, much, much poorer than they would have been if this stupid case in Washington had been able to be tried at the speed at which they can try a 12-year-old who shouts nasty things at the coppers in a so-called English, so-called far-right demonstration. The UK sides with Ofcom in What is Truth? I think the culture of free speech is entirely dead in the United Kingdom because it's a malign alliance. You see it to the same degree in America or in Europe. In part, it's been caused by the collapse of the mainstream media. Because people just aren't reading newspapers and increasingly not watching so-called mainstream television. So the mainstream media's way of protecting itself is basically to make it more and more difficult for any non-mainstream media viewpoints to be heard. That way it restores the gatekeeper function. You know, once upon a time, they had a fairly 100% gatekeeper function. You know, before they invented the internet, if you were some bloke sitting in your bedsit in Huddersfield, just using an English example here, but you had to write to the newspaper or write to BBC Radio 4. I think they had some terrible letters show, as I recall. I may even have guest hosted it at one time or another. I forget what it was called now. I guest hosted The One on Telly. I guest hosted Points of View when dear old Anne Robinson was away. And then she came back from being away and said, "You are the weakest link. Goodbye." And I went off again. But that's what you had to do. You had to write a letter and mail it to the BBC or mail it to the Daily Mail or whatever. And now they've figured out that they can restore the gatekeeping if they basically get anything that isn't them banned. For example, I wrote when I was in France, I wrote about how if you try to access anything on Rumble, people would send me links to things on Rumble. Or they'd say, "Why aren't you on Rumble, Stein?" I'd try to go on Rumble to see what this Rumble thing was they were all talking about. This is when I was convalescing from my heart attacks. And Rumble's not available in France because it's regarded as publishing Russian state propaganda, which is great. So they regard Rumble as state media. So the French state bans the state media. There's no culture. As I think it was last week, I said, you know, it doesn't matter whether you have constitutions. It doesn't matter whether you have laws. Once a people lose the habits of liberty, and if you read a lot of the commentary on either side of the Atlantic, for example, in the United States used to be much more committed to free speech, but not anymore. If you look at the numbers among young people who support the First Amendment, it's pretty dismal. I think the answer is free speech dead in the world. No, but it's pretty much on life support. Let's say one encouraging thing, by the way, was when Elon Musk just put up some fantastically obscene meme. I forget who the meme was from, but it basically Thierry Breton, who's the EU commissar for censorship. I forget what his official title is, but he's basically the censorship commissar. And he threatened Elon Musk because Elon Musk, sitting in the United States, is having an interview with Donald Trump in the United States, because Donald Trump is a candidate for an election in the United States, and therefore what he has to say is of interest to people who are eligible to vote in an election in the United States. Thierry Breton, the censorship commissar of the European Union, isn't eligible to vote in the United States. I mean, he is, in the sense that if he walked into a polling station in Philadelphia, they'd give him a ballot, but he's not officially eligible to vote in the United States. And so it's completely absurd for him to threaten Elon Musk, who is a US citizen and a subject of His Canadian Majesty also. But neither of those are in the EU. And so we've got basically one American interviewing another American, and some jumped up little twerp in Brussels is going, oh, you want to think twice about this. And what was interesting is that Elon Musk, just shoving it up Thierry Breton's butt in his response, he didn't bother, as many people would, to respond politely, because the guy is very powerful. He treated him with the contempt that Thierry Breton, who is an evil man and actually is unfit for public office in any self-governing society, he basically shoved it up the butt of Thierry Breton. And what was interesting today was the way the rest of the EU big shots, from Cruella von der Leyen down, all distanced themselves from Thierry Breton's threat to Mr. Musk. So they can carry on, and at a certain point they will. You know, right now, if you think about it, during, for example, the recent ructions on the streets of various British cities, the only way people have been able to keep track back and forth on a widely available platform, because the so-called right-of-center press in the United Kingdom has been absolutely terrible on this issue. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're talking about the Daily Mail or the Spectator or whatever. They've been absolutely horrible on it. The only way you've actually been able to figure out what's going on the ground has been via Twitter, going to things like my dear friend Sammy Woodhouse, who was doing so much good reporting from the streets of these cities, just talking to people, showing you what was going on, at a time when the realities of the story were being excluded from the so-called mainstream media. So you can see why they would want to take down Twitter, so that it would be like how it is when you try to go on Rumble in France. You just see this panel saying Rumble's not available in France because the French government has determined it's Russian state media or whatever. So you can see that they'd like to be able to do that to Twitter. They're just a bit nervous about doing it right now. But, you know, if the gap between what you can say on Twitter and what you can say in The Spectator widens any further, then they will take it down. Kiwi Gav. So speaking of Dame Jacinda, Kiwi Gav says, "Hi, Mark. It was a pleasure to meet you and Naomi Wolf at Chris Davis's fantastic after party following your appearance at the King's Bench division in London with the government censor Ofcom. I was first in the queue for the public gallery. Reading the details of the recent case of Sellafield worker Lee Dunn being jailed for posting online an image of a group of men, Asian in appearance, with the caption, 'Coming to a town near you.' Surely if this is now the standard set by the UK courts, people like Nigel Farage must be jailed, and probably yourself. Wishing you all the best, Kiwi Gav." Well, actually, Nigel walks an exquisitely fine line, but there comes a point when walking that line is no longer possible or helpful. So at some point, you just have to say screw it and let the chips fall where they may. Now, there's been a lot of stuff in the British papers. There's some guy who's gone to jail because he was yelling, "Who the F is Allah?" Right? I take the view that I think Colby Kosh, my colleague at the National Post in Canada, he put it this way 20 years ago now, almost 20 years ago, certainly around the time of my human rights battles there, that if you can't say freedom of speech is the freedom to say F Mohammed, or there's no freedom of speech at all. And he's quite right about that. And for example, this thing, "Who the F is Allah?" You can imagine all the lefty comedians who'd be up in arms if some guy went to jail for saying, "Who the F is Jesus?" Because people are somebody went to jail for the Last Supper thing they did at the Olympic opening ceremony, all the right people would be up in arms about it. And it's exactly the same for "Who the F is Allah?" That's a blasphemy law. That's a blasphemy law, and it's apparently now operative in the UK. But I can see why, you know, there are people who say, "Oh, but who the F is Allah? That's really a bit offensive. So maybe somebody should do something about that." But this, coming to a town near you and showing a group of men who appear to be, as they say, Asian, which is a euphemism for Pakistani. It's grossly offensive. If you happen to be Bhutanese or, Azerbaijani, you'd be surprised how close Asia is. They say Asian because two-thirds of the global, whatever it is it two-thirds of the global population, some extraordinary amount like that, is actually in Asia. It's Pakistani Muslim men, right? And so you show an image of a group of men and say, "Coming to a town near you." And we know what this is referring to. You know, all the migrants, right? They look like the migrants, this little 200-person Irish village in County Tipperary where the locals are protesting against having a group of 280 men, quote, Asian in appearance, unquote, dropped on them. So in other words, there's 200 people living in this village in County Tipperary, and they're now outnumbered, not just by a general population of migrants, but by a population of young migrant men, right? So it's not a good idea to let your daughters walk home from school anymore, whatever. Coming to a town near you. It is a fact that there are child sex slavery rackets going on in every town up and down the spine of England. My show was the only show on crappy old British television that covered this phenomenon regularly, where we interviewed not only victims but other persons, local councillors and all kinds of other people who wanted to talk about what was going on. Because otherwise that's been completely mothballed. Now we're saying, no, we're not just mothballing it. Yes, it's right. We used to be able to rely on the BBC and ITV. These nice chaps like Hugh Edwards and Philip Schofield all quietly agreed amongst themselves not to bring up the subject. But now it's a different world because we've got all this social media and things. So if you just put... That sounds very much like the picture we used... We just use the picture. Every time we do a special on this, like we've got one that's got Samantha Smith and Sammy Woodhouse and various other people in it. And we just use it as a picture to illustrate it, a picture of one of these gangs. Well, if Lee Dunn went to jail for posting that online, I suppose I could go to jail for posting that online. People have to butch up about this stuff. I can take a lot of it, but these are girls, right? England is a country now where girls become sex slaves. Gangs of Muslim men take these girls into sex slavery. And when the girls try to tell the local police officer or the local social worker, some of the guys who, like in Oldham, some of the guys who run these gangs actually have been social workers. In Oldham, the girl was picked up and gang raped. She was picked up in the lobby of the police station. Don't give me your bollocks about what a great country you are if this is how you treat your girls, right? You know, we've all made a fuss. I mentioned it earlier, making a fuss about this XY chromosome lady punching the lights out of that Italian lady boxer. Like, oh, that goes viral. Everybody's talking about that. Why aren't we talking in the same way? This latest stat. So last week we have three girls who are dead and the best part of another dozen with injuries they'll bear for the rest of their lives in Southport. This week we have an 11-year-old girl stabbed in Leicester Square. Leicester Square is where tourists go. This girl was a tourist. She's an Australian girl and she was in Leicester Square with her mum. And that guy stabbed her 8 times. And people got out on the streets because of the dishonesty of the coverage of these events. And if they're going to double down on the dishonesty... I tend to agree with whoever it was, David Starkey, that I think it's not going to be civil war. I think they've left it a bit too late. I'd be in favour of civil war, but I think they've left it a bit too late to start. Chris Davis says, Mark, I hope you're well. As you know, there is no such thing as two-tiered justice. So the following is merely factual but not instructive. A 26-year-old man, Connor Whiteley, has been sentenced to 3 years in jail for his role in the riots in Hull, which included knocking over a female police officer. In other news, the man who broke a female police officer's nose at Manchester Airport has been charged with nothing. Would you agree that there is absolutely nothing to see here, and anyone who says there is must be a far-right Islamophobic thug? Well, I'll tell you this, Chris, you're quite right when you say there is no such thing as two-tiered justice. We live in a world where people have got used to putting descriptors and qualifiers in front of the word justice, like social justice, famously. But in fact, there is only justice. And if you don't have justice, or if you need to put a qualifier in front of it, whether it's social justice or two-tier justice, you don't have any justice at all. And that is what is happening in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom is, I think I said this somewhere or other the last couple of days, because there's been some statistics showing that the white Anglo-Celts will become a minority in the United Kingdom by the year 2070. It's going to happen long before that. The UK is in quite a rapid transition. And the idea that a British Britain has 46 years left is very foolish. Kelly Walter says, Mark, I pray for your health every morning. So thankful for your efforts on behalf of Western civilization. In the face of such massive cultural decline, could you recommend three practical things that I can do personally to stem the tide? Or is it too late? As Rush would say, I'll tell you when to panic. If so, do you have any recommendations for panic mode? And in the midst of all the decline and decay, I truly appreciate your Serenade Radio Show, Song of the Week, Rick's Flicks, and Tales for Our Time. What a haven of historic sensibilities. Thank you for that, Kelly. You know, the problem with the conservative movement is that it doesn't conserve anything. And one of the reasons for that is because it's basically banned all the cultural... It's basically abandoned all the cultural levers of society. So it's totally uninfluential because it thinks that, you know, it retreated to what it thought were authentic vernacular forms in America, like country music and Chick-fil-A and things. And then those and NASCAR. And then it turns out all those types are woke as hell. Anyway, what's the one that came up recently? The John Deere, right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't need to go and see the New York City Ballet because I'm a butch guy. I've got my John Deere out in the yard. Nothing runs like a deer. She sent me a John Deere letter. That's a hilarious line from Dumb and Dumber, by the way. I love John Deere. I like nothing better than getting on my John Deere and going to the drive-through lane at Chick-fil-A. And ordering one of their gay burgers. You would have been better. The guy who runs John Deere is just another woke wanker, right? So you can't retreat. You say, oh, I'm not into all that pansy stuff at the New York City Ballet or whatever. I'm not into that. I just like want to be on my John Deere. Real men don't prance around in tights. They just drive around the yard in a... nothing runs like a deer all day long. It hasn't worked for you. You're the chumps. All the people. And by the way, it's fake. It's as fake as Sean Hannity saying, I'm one of those smelly Walmart people. No, he's not. He's got a private plane. Does he take the private plane to Walmart? What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Cultural decline. Well, I would say that's one thing. That is one thing you can do. Don't reward people who are killing your civilization. So you'll see this thing, you know, that National Review kind of started this. I forget who was it who used to do all these things. Was it John Miller over there? Started 25 years ago or whatever, the top 10 conservative rock songs. And they're not rock songs. They're not conservative. They're rock songs, but they're not conservative. A conservative in the rock guy world is someone who wants to screw a lot of women, screw a lot of groupies, take a lot of drugs, but pay a low level of taxes. So this idea that you taking something like the Joker's line, some men just want to watch the world burn. Oh, that shows it's got a conservative message. No, it hasn't. The people we're up against, the reason they're winning is because the wanker right thinks that it's like that. Oh, they just want to watch the world burn. No, They've got a conscious strategy of taking over the most prosperous real estate on the planet, by which I mean Europe and the United Kingdom and Canada, and they're quite advanced in those. That's not a guy who just wants to watch the world burn. That's a guy who's actually got a plan and a strategy. And so this pitiful desperation, oh yes, I went to see X-Men 37 and it's really got a conservative message. No, it hasn't got a conservative message. You know, oh yeah, the bad guy, we're going to rip a hole in the space-time continuum and rewind the clock till 1958 so he's never born. That's not... You're wasting your time trying to dredge profoundly unconservative culture for glimmers of hope. Now, some people, you know, if you take J.K. Rowling, for example, J.K. Rowling at the moment is a far-right monster, but she's not in her books. It is yet to percolate into her books. You know, what will be interesting will be after being turned into some cartoon far-right figure, whether it does actually change the nature of the books. But what I'm saying here is that's one of the things you can do pretty easily, is not reward people who want to destroy your world. That's one of them. The second, I think, is you can do your bit to expand the argument. I meet a lot of people, particularly from California and similar states, and they go, oh, I can't talk to anyone. You know, they just have to bite their tongue the whole time. Well, if you have to bite your tongue the whole time, the other side's basically won, because you're living in their world on their terms. So at a certain point, you don't have to do it all the time, so you become argumentative and irritable and nobody wants to hang out with you. But I do think at some point, the idea that is accepted in, say, southern New England or in California and a lot of other places in the United States and elsewhere, that it's a de facto one-party state. That's part of the reason why it becomes easy for them to ban Rumble and next month Twitter. It becomes easier for them to do that because they're not... It's one thing to see tweets. You know, all these people look at Elon Musk and say, this guy's a madman. There was... who was it? David Aronovich, who I think I was on... a radio show with him 25-30 years ago, and I found him a complete pill then. I had no idea he was still around, but he's basically said that Elon Musk is a madman. Elon Musk is a phenomenally successful businessman. And so the fact that you think he's mad may reflect more on you than it does on him. He can actually dock a spaceship at the International Space Station and then undock it and fly away. Whereas all the people who agree with you, David Aronovich, like the Boeing guys, this heap of junk that is now obliging these two American astronauts to stay in that, I can't even imagine what it must be like to be stuck there for months. They've been there 2 months already, and Boeing is saying, we might be able to get them down early next year. Meanwhile, even a rescue mission is difficult because this heap of junk thing by Boeing can't even be undocked from the International Space Station. Some astronaut would actually has to get into it and would have to fly it away and then somehow get back. So we're in George Clooney, that Sandra Bullock movie, whatever it was called. We're in that kind of territory now, thanks to Boeing. But Boeing are the sensible people. And Elon Musk is the nutter, according to David Aronovich. And the reason this happens is because if you're only exposed to this stuff on Twitter, it's like the 21st century. When I guessed... hosted for Rush, I used to say, because it always made me laugh, you know, that the right-wing people understand left-wing world because it's all around them. It's all around. Every, you know, they drive down the street. Oh, haters, no home here. And whereas left-wing people have no idea what the right thinks. It used to be, the example I used to give was when they take their car into the shop and the grease monkeys are doing something to it for 48 hours or whatever. And then they go and pick the car up and they pull out of the body shop. And suddenly Rush's magnificent radio theme tune comes on the radio and Rush starts talking. They go, oh, my God, what the hell is this? Because the grease monkeys have retuned the radio to listen to Rush while they're working on the car and they haven't put it back to NPR. That's the world. So the NPR lady is frantically hitting the buttons, trying to get away from Rush and getting on to something else. Get it back to normal. And the way we get around that is the way to get around that is to be letting people know that you don't have to go full, you know, you don't have to say climate change is bunk or whatever. You can just say climate change. I'm not really worried about it. I mean, I'm 43 years old, and for my entire life, people have been going on about it, and I'm really pretty relaxed about it. And you don't have to. You can use examples of things. You can start with whatever you think will be the best opening to them. I remember Ava Vladingerbrook, when she was on the show once, saying that she thought the trans thing was actually one of the best, just to get people into the idea that there are different points of view out there, because that's the one where actually, if you, and again, you don't have to be too graphic. I always use the line about slicing the breasts off middle school girls, because that is graphic. But you can talk more obliquely about rendering them infertile or whatever. But the point is, if we never talk about this stuff in life, if they don't know these people are their neighbors, in some cases their friends, their co-workers, then it becomes much easier to say, well, you know, Elon Musk, it's Putin and the QAnon guys who are running Twitter. It becomes much easier to take it all down. So that's two of the things. And then the third thing, I think, is to take it back at the local level. You can't take it back at the globalist level, but the idea of actually getting more involved in school board and municipal stuff, particularly now they're going to confine you to 15-minute cities or whatever. The best way to push back against a 15-minute city is to ensure you don't have a council that's in favour of it. So getting involved at the local level, widening, sharing the risk, which is the words that Ayaan Hirsi Ali used. And I think about that phrase of hers. I endorsed it many years ago. She's quite right about that. We need more people to speak up, because otherwise the burden is borne by a very small number of people. And I'm very mindful, for example, of people like the Charlie Hebdo crowd or Nekshot, the Dutch cartoonist. All these people that I've met over the years, and who, you know, in the case of Charlie Hebdo, they died alone because the risk was not shared, because everyone waited till they were dead before they got out the Je suis Charlie. If they'd really been doing the Je suis Charlie thing, then when the Mohammed business all, you know, Charlie Hebdo published those Mohammed, republished those Mohammed cartoons. And my magazine in Canada, the Western Standard, republished those cartoons. But all the wankers who bleat about the heroism of journalists, they never. And when they were doing all those Je suis Charlie, oh, so these guys were killed over some cartoons. Is that right? Well, could we see the cartoon? Oh, no, we're being sensitive, so we're not showing them. We have to share the risk. We have to get back in the game culturally and cease rewarding the enemies of our culture. And we have to fight back on the easiest playing field, which is at the local level. In other words, so that if your town, if the Pakistani Muslim grooming gang's leader, if his cousin is the big shot councillor, you need to be on the council. The other thing, if this does all go south, and if Kamala and this guy win in November, I would say one of the things you need to do is make sure you take steps to protect whatever you think of as your nest egg from these guys, because when everything goes belly up in America, particularly, you saw this in 2008 during the Lehman Brothers thing. My assistant was stunned. She was driving to pick me up. I'd flown in from Heathrow and I was landing at the airport in Montreal. And she'd driven up from New Hampshire to collect me. And she was stunned because about 20 miles south of the border, there was a Border Patrol guys who pulled her over and went through the car with sniffer dogs and everything because they wanted to find out if she had $10,000 or more that she was running across the border to Canada. In other words, they were going to prevent her doing what the Greeks were doing. They were driving to Germany and putting their money in German banks. So when the powder keg goes up, you're not going to want to have any of your nest egg in the First National Bank of Dead Moose Junction. That's just I've wandered on a bit on this answer, but it was rather interesting to have it put like that. Let's pause a moment from the passing Sherry Van. Oh, no, we don't do that anymore, do we? We've moved all the music on this show over to Serenade Radio, Saturdays at 5 p.m. London time, in order to free up more time here to talk about who's up 2 points in Pennsylvania. Because whatever answer it is, come the early hours of Wednesday morning in November, they'll be doing what's necessary to correct it. But at any rate, our show will ne'er be sullied by my niche Canadian musical obsessions again. On this Saturday's Serenade Radio Show, I've just been sort of plotting it out. I've got like a couple of anecdotes there. I was thinking, what did I do? I didn't do anything. Do you know what I did today? I got a haircut. Because I have this exhaustion thing when I venture out into the world, like to do my little thing at Hillsdale a couple of months back. It wipes me out for like months after all, flying into London for that thing at the Royal Court of Justice. It wipes me out. So I don't go anywhere. I don't do anything. And in fact, I realized I was just like putting in a little anecdote here and a little anecdote there. I was thinking, picking out music that would match the anecdotes I'm interested in telling. And I realized that all the interesting things happened to me in the 1980s, and it's been downhill since then. But I did get my haircut today. So there's that. Anyway, we are live around. That's coming up on. I'm getting a few more personal anecdotes in, just because that's the kind of how I'm feeling these days. Anyway, we're live around the planet. It's 13 to 4 North American Eastern Time. That is 13 to 9 British Summer Time, and a little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent Earth. Ming the Merciless, possibly not his real name. I would be impressed to find Klaus Schwab's identical twin listening to this show. In your intro to today's Q&A, you made mention of how modern Western civilization is so into S&M, with it being the passive empire. Now, I don't think I said that, did I? I don't recall that. Doesn't sound like me. I know what you're probably referring. You're referring to that thing where I said Nigeria. This is my feel-good story of the day. Nigeria has had this crap national anthem for the last 45 years, and they've passed a law junking it and going back to their old colonial anthem, which was written by two nice white English ladies. And everyone in Nigeria, they all love this song and they never liked the new anthem. And so everybody in Nigeria, the newspapers there are full of these cute stories about the great days when they had the old colonial anthem written by the white ladies. It's the feel-good story of the day. And I said, I think I said something like, that's because they're not mired in terrible self-loathing like we are. And well, certainly like the United Kingdom is, and I think the United States. This thing where I noticed that the United Kingdom didn't used to be as bad about this as the United States. It's basically decided to impose an American view of race on a country with an entirely different history. So now you have these things. I think there's some town in Norfolk that says it's not going to, which is now sounding like a town in California, announcing that it's not going to fly the Union Jack anymore because there are people who find it controversial in the way you read these stories from American schoolhouses, that they're not going to fly Old Glory because people find it controversial. There's not a lot of ways back from this. What is this is an elite psychosis. And again, this is why the abandoning the culture thing matters, because it's never a numbers game, is it? You know, it's just give me 10 who are stout-hearted men. It's Gary Cooper walking down Main Street at high noon. You know, it's James Bond taking out 50,000 extras driving around in Bayco foil suits in little golf buggies before he gets to the button that prevents the laser beam being fired from outer space. None of these are numbers games. But what matters is who the minority, and indeed the American Revolution. If you look at New York State, the majority of residents of New York State were not in favor of the revolution, which is why huge numbers of them moved up to the North Shore of Lake Ontario on the, what is it called now, the United Loyalist Parkway, because they were loyalists. And they had to get out of New York State in a hurry. What matters is who the minority, what matters is who's got the most energy. It's not a numbers game, it's an energy game. And the left has the energy in part because they control everything cool. And so the right strategy, the American right strategy, we're just into country music and barbecue, and that's all. Yeah, it hasn't worked for you, has it? Because you're not anybody who matters, right? So you can make jokes about, you know, you see that it's just the Twitter squall of the day. Barbara Streisand mocking Trump for not taking any questions, right? And everyone's going, oh, how totally out of it is Barbara Streisand that she doesn't know it's Kamala Harris who doesn't answer any questions, whereas Trump's happy. Trump schedules a 15-minute press conference and he's still answering questions 3 hours later. Ha, 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 ha. What an idiot Barbara Streisand is. Well, unfortunately, all Barbara and all her neighbours in Malibu matter. And so if you're not playing on the turf where the people who matter are, if you abandon all the spheres of influence, then you're not going to be able to turn this around. They don't need things like the Constitution. They think they don't. You know, once it starts, You only have to wander slightly off the reservation on one topic, like J.K. Rowling. And she can only do that because she's the richest woman in the world. But, you know, they can cause a lot of problems for her. This suit in France, you know, I don't know where she goes, but France is a country that a lot of people with money like to go to. And it will be a bit of a problem if she can't go to France because she's liable to be arrested. And in fact, it's more basic than that. You've got to be very careful if you've got no plans to go to France, but you're on a long haul flight from Dubai to Heathrow, and there's some problem and you have to come down early at Charles de Gaulle or whatever, it can cause you a whole big heap of problems. But the point is, right, you've got to be, if you abandon all the levers of influence in your society, you can't, this whole, and again, we saw this during the Obama years where people just, I think it was Jonah Goldberg who said this, well, we should maybe just retreat and tend our gardens, right? Well, the right doesn't need to retreat. It's retreated from everything anyway. Toby Pilling says, why is Sky News Australia so brilliantly sound while Sky News UK is insipidly woke? It is a mystery to me. Well, it's not a mystery. It's very easy. Rupert Murdoch sold Sky News UK, but he still owns Sky News Australia. So they have completely different, they have the same name. And I think they still have some shared interest. They used to be, do they still have that Sky News Europe or something like that? They have some shared interest. And they still have a deal, for example, where in the overnight hours on Sky News Australia, they basically carry the feed from London. But it's basically two completely different ownerships. That's the answer to that question. And Rupert. And the interesting thing is, Rupert lives in Oxfordshire, and Lachlan, his son, and the guy who will be taking over, lives in New South Wales. This is what's interesting to me about the coverage of what happened with Tucker. It was all complete rubbish because the people who make the decisions, the important decision, they don't, you know, the decision as to whether Mark Stein is invited on to talk about Andrew Cuomo's dog. That doesn't have to go through Rupert or Lachlan. But the important decisions like canning Tucker are. And neither of those guys lives in the United States. And Rupert spends most of his time in Oxfordshire, and Lachlan spends most of his time in, I forget which suburb in New South Wales it is. But he's on board with the, it's interesting to me that Sky News Australia on things like Joe Biden's dementia was way butcher than Fox News. And I think in part that's because Lachlan just we had a sort of freer hand with Sky News Australia there. Bill Holcomb says, hi, Mark. Apparently the Harris campaign is rewriting past Kamala-related headlines to create more favourable Google searches. I use this Orwellian activity to consider the larger picture pursuant to your frequent admonishment. The novel 1984 was prescient, but Orwell could not have created that world from whole cloth. Today's lib progressive ideas were certainly around in 1949. Why do you think those ideas have come to be adopted by majorities throughout post-monarchical Western civilization? That's an interesting phrase. Post-monarchical Western civilization. Hey, oh, wait a minute. Did you get that from Viktor Orban's speech, the speech he gave in Romania that we've been discussing every couple of days over the last week or so at Stein Online, because he was talking about changes within the West. He says we're in a big historical moment because half a millennium of Western dominance is coming to an end. And he's right about that. And he said his point is we don't see it in that way, because all the changes these last half millennium have been within the West. For example, you know, the French losing at the Battle of Trafalgar determined who would dominate the 19th century. And then, as he put it, this was his phrase, the end of the monarchies in the First World War, which it largely was. The fall of the Romanovs in Russia and the fall of the Hohenzollerns in Germany and the fall of the Habsburgs in Vienna and all the rest of it. And it's interesting that you picked up on that, Bill, calling it post-monarchical Western civilization. As you know, I've long felt that we are basically still living in the long shadows of the Great War, and basically a lot of the pathologies that have been incubating and are now running rampant across the land were actually seeded at the end of the Great War. And since you call it post-monarchical Western civilization, that's not a bad way to look at it. If you take the Hohenzollerns, if you take the German Empire, or the Habsburg Empire, because that's a more benign example, really. Basically, in a setup like the Habsburg Empire, and I know there's a guy who said, I don't want to hear trivia from the Habsburg Empire. Why can't you get back to talking about who's 2 points in up in Pennsylvania? Because your civilization's screwed. You're going off the cliff. And you won't even know why. And if I was minded to, I wouldn't talk about Vienna, I'd talk about Venice, because the Republic of Venice lasted 1,000 years, which is 4 times as long as the American Republic is likely to last. So let me calm down a bit. The thing about the Habsburgs, right, is in a monarchy, the difference between this is for you guys who say, oh, I wish you, why do you, Tucker's always going on about our democracy and the left's always going on about our democracy. We're not a democracy, we're a constitutional republic. Stop being so parochial. Canada could say that. Oh, well, why do they talk about democracy? We're not a democracy, we're a constitutional monarchy. In a constitutional monarchy or an unconstitutional monarchy, the king is the state. That's it. The beginning and end. As a French guy once said, l'état, c'est moi. The state is me. He's quite right. And there are disadvantages to that. But the one advantage is it's not an ideological proposition. And when they removed, if you notice, when they removed the monarchs in Europe, so instead of the Kaiser in Berlin, you have the Weimar Republic socialists, and then you have the National Socialists. You shoot the Russian royal family at Ekaterinburg, and then you have communists. In other words, those, and I'm just like riffing here because I hadn't thought about it till I read the last sentence. But instead of just having an hereditary proposition for a state, instead of just saying, oh, we're Sweden and we have kings of Sweden and we're the Netherlands, and we've just because, you know, we've had them a long time. That's it. You move away from that to an ideological basis for the state. And I think that becomes much harder to sustain. And you don't even have to go. It creeps into things. Not every institution is immediately ideological. So I could give European examples. The European Constitution, for example, guarantees that, you know, your right to be free from climate change and all kinds of stuff. That was in the version that whoever it was voted, I think it was the French and Irish, voted down. But you have the same trend under the US Constitution. Basically, when you have judges torturing the language to find completely absurd constitutional rights, and that's true whether you're talking about judges in the 70s discovering a constitutional right to abortion, or judges in more recent years discovering a right to same-sex marriage or transgender bathrooms or whatever. You're basically when you do things like that, you're embedding ideology at the heart of the state. And I don't feel that's I'm just riffing here. It's probably the sort of thing I would have, if I weren't being sued so often, I'd work up into a book or whatever. But I think that's one of the problems. And I think The idea that it used to be that a country was just where you happen to be. You know, I'm Danish, so I happen to be living in Denmark. What is Denmark? Well, I don't think about it too often. There's a queen, but she doesn't really bother me much. And what has happened since the end of the Great War is that has increasingly, that has proved insufficient. One of the biggest changes is that even if you go back to the days of absolute monarchy, is that citizens now are charges of the state in ways they were not before they became self-governing democracies. So if you look at all the people, it doesn't really matter, again, America, Canada, Europe, pick whatever example you want. The number of people who are charges of the state, you know, in the days when they were just some peasant subject of some distant emperor, they were not as formally such pitiful dependents as they are now. So something has gone. And once you do that, it is very difficult to get people acting as if they are with the habits of liberty, to use the phrase I used before. Drew Weber says, hello, Mark. The VP pick is not typically a significant factor in a presidential race. Will this year be different? Well, it actually might. For this reason, their plan is to keep Kamala Harris under wraps until Election Day. There's a reason for this. She's quite thin-skinned and not terribly likable. I'd ask anyone to actually go back and look at the vice presidential debate from last time round with Mike Pence, where she sort of was touchy and thin-skinned. The difference is now she's touchy and thin-skinned about stuff she's responsible for these last 4 years. So their thing is to keep her under wraps until Election Day, so people don't find out they don't really like her until it's too late. And that seems to be working for them to this extent. I look at this, I don't believe most of these polls anyway. But one thing that does, the so-called Kamala bound, I think it's clear that Biden versus Trump was going to be a base election. In other words, there's a lot of people who don't like either candidate, and so we're just going to sit it out. And so there was going to be a non-Biden vote that would vote for Trump, and there was going to be a non-Trump vote that would vote for Biden. And they're not equal. You know, there's far more people who, particularly after what they've done to him with all this litigation and shooting at him, the Secret Service letting him get shot at, you know, so there's a broken glass vote for Trump. The reason they got rid of Biden is because there's a broken glass vote for, even in a base election, there's a broken glass vote for Trump. There's people who would crawl over broken glass to vote for Trump because of what the deep state did to him, whether it's all the litigation or whether it's allowing him to get shot at. And there was no broken glass vote for Biden. So Biden was falling far behind the ability of the Democrats in Philadelphia and the other usual cities to steal the thing for him. If you're going to have a fraud, you need narrow fraud. You don't need fraud. You don't. It's too much to have fraud in 700 different towns. That you need hundreds of thousands of people to be on board with. That's not going to work. So they needed to get rid of Biden to put it back, to put the picture back where it was conceivable that it could be stolen relatively discreetly. Now, she has got better numbers than him, but it's interesting to me where it's come. It's mainly come from third party candidates. You know, RFK Jr. was polling at 8 or 10, and Kamala jumped in the race and he suddenly falls to 4 or 5. That's where her little Philip that she got for not being Joe Biden has mostly come from. Now, I don't know why, if you take RFK seriously, why you would say, oh, yeah, I don't need RFK anymore, so I'm with Kamala now. I mean, that's crazy. He's a serious person who thinks seriously about certain issues, like the over-medication of American school children. That's a, whatever. That's not a particularly left-right thing, or it shouldn't be, and he is serious about it, and that's something we should be serious about. But so those people were just, apparently, a big chunk of that were just people, but Joe Biden's a bit old and embarrassing for me, so I'd just like someone less old and less embarrassing. So I was going to go with RFK, but Kamala, she's not as old and she's not as embarrassing. And what I've always wanted, really, I think the time is right for a high-caste Brahmin Jamaican Montreal schoolgirl president. And you're a racist if you disagree. And, you know, frankly, if that's enough to put her over the edge, then you do deserve to go off the cliff, because it's a stupid reason to choose the head of your executive branch. It's just a stupid reason. John Wilson says, Mark, are the Brits showing buyer's remorse for Keir Starmer yet? I don't think they... To have buyer's remorse, you've got to have bought it in the first place. And I think, I forget the number, but it was worked out that only 20% of eligible UK voters had actually voted for Labour, but he'd won this incredible majority because of the vagaries of the first-past-the-post system. So he's got a huge majority. But I really don't think there's, as I said, to have buyer's remorse, you have to have bought him. And on those numbers, 80% of eligible voters in the United Kingdom never vote him, never bought him. But he can do terrible things. He's an authoritarian. He's no friend of things like free speech. And he's using all these awful laws that were brought in by these pseudo-conservatives. You know, all the wankers. Cameron, May, Johnson, Truss, Sunak, all of them. And they brought in these bills that are now being weaponized by Keir Starmer. You know, like the online harms bill and all the rest of it. Queen of the Jungle says, Dear Mark, I can't tell you how much I enjoy our weekly get-togethers, especially during these most interesting times we live in. I use the word interesting in the sense of the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. My questions today, what are your thoughts about the big Trump-Musk confab, especially as it relates to the attempted censorship of that event by some of our satanic overlords? Now that virtually every deep state denizen is admitting, hell, bragging about how the 2020 election was stolen from our President Trump, what do you think the chances are that the same thing will happen this November? From where I sit, it looks like the demon rat cheating machine is well oiled and ready to go, while the dopey repubs remain in la la land. Thanks for everything and hope to see you soon. Yeah, I hope to see me soon. It's been a while. I think, yeah, that's a very, where did I get that? I know where I got it from. Rosie Clooney's wedding, and Bob Hope was there. And Hope was, I think, 98 or whatever. At one point, Rosie reached over and took his hand and said to Bob Hope, I miss you. And Bob Hope said, I miss me too. By which he meant he missed the rapid, quick-fire quipster he used to be. A very good line. What you have to ask about this is, do you think the point of democracy... don't wave that constitution at me! I'm making a general point here. It applies to constitutional republics and constitutional monarchies and even to direct democracies. The point about it, the reason you have democracy is to bind the loser to the result, right? That's why you don't have it in a lot in dictatorships. In dictatorships, the dictator wins 97% of the vote, and the leader of the opposition wins 3% and then gets executed after election day. But in democratic societies, the point of democracy is to bind the loser to the result. Because he knows he's had a fair shake and he came up a little. He only got 48.7% this time, but he had a fair shake. And he thinks maybe in 4 or 5 years' time, with one more push, he can do it. And this time the opposition will win. That's the point of democracy. And that is what has been completely destroyed by the Democrats in America. So the Democrats contest every result. They famously contested 2000. In 2004, they had these exit polls in the afternoon showing that John Kerry had triumphed, and so they never accepted that result. Then we get 2016. Hillary Clinton says that Macedonian content farmers stole the election for Trump. So we have not had the Democrats accepting the result of an election they have lost this century. And that has done huge damage to the purpose of democracy, which, as I just said, is to get the losers buy-in on the result. And so you don't have that anymore. And the question you have to ask yourself, Queen of the Jungle, is if you think after 2000, 2004, 2016, if you think the Democrats would be any different this time round? No, they wouldn't. So that in the event that Trump did win, they would not accept that result. And so then you have to work back from that and think, well, if that's how they feel and that's how they've behaved for the entirety of this century, are they actually prepared to let a free and fair election take place? And I would say, no, they do what's necessary. They do what's necessary, and they hope that it doesn't have to be more than necessary. But I see no. I mean, Do you think people willing to hold a free and fair election would allow this guy, this 20-year-old genius? You know, we're told the Secret Service is the most expensive protection detail on the planet, right? It's one of those things you think of when you think of the American president. Because if the American president comes to your country, you don't get to see him. All you see is the Secret Service guys flanking the vehicle with the telephone cords in this. So, it's exciting. The American president came to visit his ancestral village today. And I was so thrilled. So I went to see, oh, did you see him? No. I saw a lot of Secret Service guys in the reflector shades. That was very cool. So these guys, the most expensive protection detail on the planet, facilitates this kid taking a pop at Trump. Right? And as you look at the timeline, all the people, right? All the people who say, oh, yeah, the guy on the, oh, there's a guy wandering around with a mysterious bulky bat. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a guy, there's a ladder up against the, oh, yeah. Oh, there's a guy on the roof. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's picking up the weapon. All the people who went through these stages, including the new acting director of the Secret Service, want Trump dead. It's as simple as that. So it's not difficult, Queen of the Jungle. If they're actually prepared to facilitate his death, do you think they're the kind of people who are going to let him win an election? I don't see that. That's a jolly note on which to end, I guess. But it's the reality. It's the reality here. Because, as I said, politics is not possible. Politics is only possible where you get the losers' buy-in on the result. And they're not prepared. They're not prepared to do that. So whatever it is they're playing, it's not politics. This has been Mark Steyn's Clubland Q&A. Across the planet, are you getting excited about the closing music? Tough. Ain't no closing music because we've moved all that to Saturdays on Serenade Radio. 5 p.m. London time, which is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 noon North American Eastern. Hope you'll join me this weekend. That's going to do it for today. Stick with Steyn Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen Cohen rounds up the internet as only she can. And don't forget on Friday, a brand new Tale for Our Time starts right here, and a very timely tale it is too. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Steyn Club, come on in. The water's fine, and don't forget, for the Steyn shy chum in your life, there is a Mark Steyn Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Steyn's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Steyn Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.